Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. With Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Greg Cosell joins us every week at this time, presented by the Huffacre Group of Keller Williams Realty. Make the right move by choosing Huffacre. Visit them online, thgtn.com, or call 833-THG-NASH. We have the very best analyst on to break down the film across the NFL. We always start Titans and then work our way around the league. And Greg Cosell joins us now. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, what's happening?
Great.
We've been talking a lot about Rashawn Evans. I just talked to him in the locker room, and he was very upbeat and didn't seem to be very self-critical.
Well, what is the whole deal with him?
He looked lost in this game some to me, and I'm wondering what you thought.
Well, I watched it. I watched that pretty carefully. There were a couple of plays he was. There were a couple of plays Jayon Brown was totally lost. I guess we're not talking about him, though, because he's Jayon Brown and not the rookie. I mean, I watched that really carefully. I mean, he was lost, for instance, on the second play of the game, totally lost. And I would definitely argue that his, at this point in time, that his play recognition is not necessarily where you want it to be. He's slow with his play recognition. For stacked backers, they have run and pass responsibilities on every play, and those can be attacked and put in conflict. I think he's at the learning curve right now for that, and it will take a little time.
Greg, right now, where is Evans at his best? What do you notice?
Well, he's not played a ton of snaps, John. See, mm-hmm. This is the issue we face, and see, I'm just not good with this stuff. Like, you know, people start asking me about, you know, coaches after three games. Oh, they need a new coach. You know, let's step back for a minute. The kid missed a ton of training camp. At Alabama, he played stack backer and then was also used significantly as an edge rusher. So you're teaching him how to play stacked linebacker in the NFL. You're teaching him. You're starting relatively from scratch. He is not going to be an all-pro Hall of Fame stacked linebacker two or three games into his NFL career. So let's slow the roll here.
Sure.
He has some issues with recognition. Perfectly normal. Recognition and awareness, perfectly normal. But let's not put this performance, which, by the way, did the Bills have 200 yards of offense in this game?
I don't believe they did.
So let's not put this game on the Titans' defense. Let's put the game where it belongs, which is the fact that this offense is a week-to-week proposition that really struggles at times to score. This game was not lost because of the Titans' defense.
If they reached 200, it was right at the end because of their run game on that drive.
So, you know,
Is he a liability now? Is it really what I was asking? Can you continue to have him out on the field?
Yes, you can, and you're going to have to because that's why you drafted him. Is he as good as Wesley Woodyard? Of course not. Wesley Woodyard's played in this league a long time. It's not an issue per se. There's a lot of teams that are like this now in the NFL, and there are some weeks it does become an issue. A lot of teams have gone to quicker, lighter linebackers with the premise that the NFL is now a passing league, which, based on numbers, is a very fair statement. And based on the fact that a lot more teams line up with three wide and spread the field, so you want linebackers who can play inside out with speed and range. That is true a very, very good part of the time. But then there's particular weeks, like when you play the Buffalo Bills, who have no passing game whatsoever, and a rookie quarterback who's at this point in time a little bit lost, and they're playing to compensate for that, so they're not going to throw the ball very much. You get into games where they're going to run it, and they're going to run it for the most part right at you. Now, late in the game on the final drive, they decided to go with a couple of tosses with the pin-pull concept, and they were effective, but for the most part, they ran right at the Titans. So in those given games, and they're few and far between, small, lighter linebackers tend to have trouble.
Greg, we'll get to the offense in just a second because I know those were where the issues are for this game plan. But while we're talking defense, let's talk run defense. Last year's defense allowed around 80 yards per game on the ground, and so far this season they're allowing about 50 yards more per game. Where are the real issues in their run defense right now compared to what we saw not too long ago?
Well, let's break this down, which I did. First of all, you have to the sample size is not large enough to say there's a major issue yet, but I will say this. They faced 119 rushes by running backs this year, and they're giving up 4.3 yards per rush with a long run of 21 yards. Okay, now, could that be better, the 4.3? It could, but they're not. That's not a gashing number, okay? And they're not giving up any. They've only given up one, explosive play of 20 plus yards in the run game. Now, to quarterbacks is where they're having the issue, Jonathan.
Okay,
that's where the issue is coming in. They've given up not long runs, but quarterbacks have rushed 20 times for over 5 yards a rush. So I think there's a separation there that has to be made note of. And I think very often too, it becomes a function of who you're playing. I can't remember every opponent they played a year ago. Obviously, they play a team in Jacksonville that has a running quarterback. Did they only play Deshaun? Did they play Deshaun Watson once last year?
Yeah, and he killed him.
Yeah, and he killed right. So I wouldn't. I guess I would put it this way. I would say that through 5 games, I don't think run defense is an Achilles heel per se. The numbers are not as good, but we might be having a different conversation 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Greg Cosell with us on the Midday 180. Greg, let's start with Mariota offensively. How do they find Mariota more runs within this offense? Because we expected to see him on the move more against Buffalo. Tell us what Buffalo did to keep him in the pocket the way they did.
Looked like zero called runs, right?
You see, here's another thing I have a problem with. What position does he play?
Well, hey, we're all with you on because Marcus being a quarterback who needs to succeed from the pocket.
I watched every single throw of his as a Titan, and probably 80% of his throws his last 2 years in college when I was doing him for the draft. So Mariota plays quarterback. So what we need to do with Marcus Mariota is we need to get him to be a consistent player throwing the football. That is priority number one. Okay? He is continuing to struggle eliminating and isolating, with the result being that he tends to leave some throws on the field. At this point in time, he remains a little slow in seeing things. This is what we should be working on. We should not be working on how many more runs he can get. Now, is it okay to run the ball on occasion? Sure. But that's not what will make him improve. This offense and Matt LaFleur's offense, which we know systemically is a very good offense because of the principles that come from Shanahan and McVay, it's not about the quarterback running the ball. It's about presenting the quarterback with defined reads and throws, which they often do, and Mariota tends to be a tick late with a lot of throws. So this is where the work needs to be. It's not adding 3 runs in the game plan for this week. This is a passing game that needs to be better. He needs to develop more patience in the pocket, and he just needs to become a better pocket quarterback. That's what will ultimately make him a better player.
Well, and maybe the unfortunate truth right now, though, is with this Titans offense, they are more effective on the field moving the ball when Mariota's a bigger part of the running game. So with everything you just said out there, is this a situation where he can improve some of those instincts within the offense, or is Marcus Mariota simply not the ideal fit for what Matt LaFleur wants?
That's a great question, and I think it's too soon to answer that. But, that is theoretically a possibility. We don't know the answer to that yet, but I will say this. I remember Bill Parcells would always say when he got a new coaching job that he was trying to build something. And he said, the goal your first year in trying to build something is not to win two extra games. He said, that's irrelevant. That doesn't mean anything. The goal is to build it so you build something for a long term and you have it all in place the way it needs to be. So I know everybody wants an extra win here and there, and this is probably viewed as a terrible loss to a so-called bad Bills team, but the goal, when all is said and done, if this offense is going to be humming at some point, which was the reason they brought Matt LaFleur in, it's not going to be humming because Marcus Mariota has three extra runs in a given week.
You talked about eliminating and isolating and missing throws. There were at least two. One was very obvious where Jonnu Smith on the Nick Williams drop after he rolled out. Jonnu Smith was wide open behind a bunch of people. Looked like he got free back there and they lost him. I'm wondering if you think he saw something that told him not to go there, or if that made you question his faith in Jonnu Smith right now.
I think you'd have to ask Marcus Mariota. But I tell you what stands out on tape for the most part, and it's interesting that, you know, the week before, see, and it's also a week-to-week league, so, you know, last week we were singing the praises of this pass offense, sure, because they were very aggressive, which they were not in this game, which was very interesting to me. And again, I don't know the answer to that. That's a Matt LaFleur question. But I would say that they were not that difficult to defend in this game. They rarely attacked at the intermediate and vertical levels. They played very condensed. And, I don't know what the answer to that question is. Now, the other part of all this is they don't have a consistent run game on a week-to-week basis. There's no real hang-your-hat part of their offense on a week-to-week basis, so they end up becoming an offense that's reliant on individual plays. And to me, maybe I'm old school, you know, I've been doing this a long time, I've talked to a lot of coaches who've been coaching for a lot of years and have seen a lot of changes in the NFL, but I'm not comfortable, and I don't think most coaches are, with the idea that you rely on individual plays to work in order for your offense to be effective.
The Titans are headed to London, and 104.5 The Zone is headed across the pond, so you don't miss a moment. Tune in all day Friday, October 19th for complete coverage from London, including the Midday 180 live from the Titans Team Pub, presented by Crown Royal and by Boost Mobile by Wireless Plus. Your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We're excited for that broadcast. Excited for another segment with Greg Cosell, presented by the Huffacre Group of Keller Williams Realty. They're online, THGTN.com, or you can call 833-THG-NASH.
Greg, who are the teams in the NFL with the best wide receiver depth?
Well, let me just
ask for a couple reasons, because A, I want to compare their depth to the Titans' depth, and B, people here, no matter how much we're trying to talk them down, are demanding a trade. So if you were going to go try to chase somebody else's fifth receiver who might be your fourth, I'm wondering who those teams
are. Let me just say one thing to finish up what we said before.
Sure.
There's no way I would have expected Marcus Mariota at this point to be throwing for 400 yards every week, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, this stuff does take time. But what you're looking for is incremental progress. And I think it's been very up and down and very inconsistent and very erratic. Now, maybe we're having a different conversation in a month, and let's hope we are. But I think that I sense watching the tape that they're holding back a little bit. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's because of Marcus Mariota, because I don't know, but it just looks like they are. So anyway, wide receiver depth, I mean, I think that a team like Atlanta has a lot of wide receiver depth. You know, they have players who don't get a lot of snaps. Now, it all depends on what you think of those wide receivers. See, the thing is, at this point in time, when you talk about trading for people, you know, I don't know what you necessarily are expecting. You know, you're not going to be trading for Antonio Brown. You know, so I mean, the Falcons have a Justin Hardy, who I think was a second or third round pick, who's their fourth receiver. They've got a guy named Marvin Hall, who actually has a lot of juice to him, maybe plays three or four snaps a game, if that, but has very good vertical speed. So, you know, there's a team where a Marvin Hall, if you're interested in trading for him, you certainly wouldn't have to give up a lot if they're willing to trade him. But those are the kinds of receivers you're going to get. You're not going to be getting a big time number one or number two type receiver.
Anybody else particularly deep?
I think the Chiefs have a lot of depth at wide receiver. I mean, they've got DeMarcus Robinson, who I've always loved, and he's technically their fourth, you know, because they've got Tyreek Hill, Chris Conley, Sammy Watkins. So now you've got DeMarcus Robinson. You guys know him from Florida in the SEC, had a number of issues in college and was suspended a number of times. But I think talent-wise, he would have been a top five receiver in that draft class. So, you know, again, I don't know if he's available, but he's their fourth receiver in Kansas City.
Greg Cosell is with us. Greg, still currently, Delanie Walker has more receptions than Jonnu Smith on the season. How do they get him more involved? Do you see opportunities for Smith to get more involved in this offense?
Well, I mean, the problem when you watch them is because there's no real rhythm to what they're doing, it's hard for me to get a feel for exactly what they're trying to get done sometimes. You know, when you watch teams that are very rhythmic in the passing game, you know, the quarterback gets back, hits the back foot, the ball comes out, it's boom, 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 and it's usually spread around to a decent number of guys. It's not necessarily built on the premise of, let's get this particular guy to be the focus. Now, every given opponent presents certain matchup situations where you might design a play off your base concepts where you say, hey, we want this guy to be the slot receiver on this play because we like this matchup. But this kind of offense at its core is not built on, let's just look for a matchup and see what we can do. It's built more on concepts.
Greg Cosell is with us. He joins us every week here on the Midday 180. He's presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Greg, let's talk the Baltimore Ravens, watching them prior to last week, they move the football. They find targets in their passing game. Flacco has been pretty productive. They throw it around. And he does very well on the move as well, looking downfield. What are the strengths of what the Titans will face from that Ravens offense this Sunday?
Well, I think they theoretically have every dimension you want in the pass game because they've got a vertical in Brown. They've got an intermediate in Crabtree who's really had a hard time with drops this year, and it's become a problem. They should have won the game. He dropped a touchdown this week. They've got Willie Snead, who's a very good slot receiver. They've got a multitude of tight ends who all are very, very good. And so they present a lot of problems in the pass game, and they've got a good O-line. So up until yesterday, and I don't think Flacco threw the ball poorly yesterday, but I thought the previous two games Flacco threw the ball really, really well. With confidence, he's always had great velocity at the intermediate levels, and I thought he was really accurate. So, you know, I think he, for the most part, has played well this year. I think overall, the bigger issue playing off what we've been discussing today is this is a very difficult defense to play against. They're number one in third down defense. They have a lot of good players, and they're really schematically difficult to play against.
Taylor Lewan's got a bad right foot. I'm wondering if you could talk us through maybe how a pass rusher sensing an advantage on that element would approach him in Suggs.
Well, Suggs will know that because Suggs is outstanding as a pass rusher, understanding leverage and how to use that against an offensive tackle. He is phenomenal at contacting an offensive tackle when he senses that there's balance and body control issues. You know, so you see Suggs very often make contact when, let's say, an offensive tackle lifts that left foot just slightly off the ground, the outside foot, because when you lift that foot off the ground just a little bit, it could be an inch, but now you're a one-footed player, and that's when you see 320-pound offensive tackles get moved by guys who weigh 250 pounds. And Suggs is outstanding at that. Now, they don't. Not only do they have Suggs, they have Matt Judon, who's a very good edge rusher. They use Smith both outside and inside. This is a team that stunts an awful lot, and they're very multiple with their stunts, and they use stunts in combination with blitzes. They really present a lot to an offensive line. This is a big homework week for that offensive line.
Greg Cosell with us. Greg, sometimes the head coach, the play caller, I should say, and the quarterback just click. Everything just fits well. Describe the relationship that you notice on film between Sean Payton and Drew Brees and why that has worked so well as that duo just continues to rack up numbers together.
Well, that's been going on. First of all, it's been going on for a long time, and I think that's important. You know, I, just as much as the next guy, can get caught up in making, you know, definitive judgments, you know, after 2 weeks. And that's why I wanted to say what I said about Mariota in the past game when we came out of the break.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, this is not the definitive, oh, my God, he can't play, you know. But Brees and Payton have been together a really long time. Brees, at his core, is a rhythm player. And Sean Payton is outstanding with his use of personnel, formations, and route concepts in presenting throws to his quarterback within the timing and structure of the pass drop. Because the pass game is about timing up the drop of the quarterback with the depth of the routes. That's what a pass game is. So three-step drop has certain depth of routes. Five-step drop has certain depth of routes. Seven-step drop has certain depth of routes. You have to marry those up and present the read to the quarterback that way. Payton is so good at that, and Brees is an absolute master. And Brees, one thing that's always overlooked with Brees throughout his career, he's been phenomenal with his pocket movement. His lower body strength has always been tremendous to move within the pocket.
Greg Cosell with this final thing for you, Greg. Cincinnati pulled the comeback on Miami this past Sunday. They're 4-1. Many people writing and discussing Andy Dalton. I'd like to discuss, though, their run game and Joe Mixon, which stood out to me in this game, because this was a running back who had 10 carries for 19 yards at the half, and then they got going in the second half to help pull that comeback.
Which says an awful lot about that. How often have we talked about that, Jonathan, when I said that a run game, you're going to get 2 yards, 1 yard,
right,
minus one, 3 yards, and you have to stay with a run game. Too many coaches don't because, you know, as I said, there's a sense that everything's about the quarterback and let's just toss the ball around. And a lot of coaches now have the belief that, hey, I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to gain 5 yards. Well, it's not the 5 yards itself. It's what that does to an offense as a whole and theoretically a team as a whole. So I think, to me, you hit on, to me, what is the most telling point of Cincinnati's win this past week.
53 of their 74 second half yards from Joe Mixon came in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was just, they grinded away at that defense, and then it paid off in the final.
See, you
got to
practice that. That does happen, snapping your fingers. You know,
right.
It's not a water faucet. You can't just turn it on and off. You've got to practice that.
Greg Cosell, he's with us every Wednesday, bringing the knowledge. Thank you, Greg, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah.